Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/Green Festival. This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Bloomberg Quick Take's Tim Stenovek. We're here every day bringing you the latest news from the world of business and finance.
Plus technology, politics, economics, all harnessing the power of Business Week reporters and editors.
Not to mention our 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
You can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Bloomberg Radio.
Or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News. All right, we know there's a lot going on. We are all focused on Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine, Russia's invasion of Ukraine, which has seen military forces go in from the north, east, and south, accompanied by missile and artillery fire. So let's get some thoughts on both the economic and geopolitical implications of that invasion. Peter Cheer, head of macro strategy at Academy Securities, along with retired Major General Mastin Robeson. He is geopolitical intelligence advisor to the Academy's advisory board, and he's served over 34 years of active duty in the U.S. Marine Corps in more than 60 countries. Peter from Florida, General Robeson, he is with us on the phone from South Carolina. First and foremost, let's not forget, we are watching financial markets. We are watching and trying to figure out the political strategy, watching these press conferences. But as people keep reminding me on Twitter, there are people's lives at stake and a lot of uncertainty. So I just wanted to put that out there because we do need to keep that front and center. General, let me start with you, though. You've spent more than three decades facing global situations and stresses. What are the extreme risks here, and how likely is that to play out in your view?
Yeah, the extreme risks are obviously significant. A lot will depend, I believe, on the world public opinion as to whether that will have an influence on what Putin does. If he receives it, there's sort of a agnostic approach to Ukraine and what he's doing there. I mean, you'd hate to think it, but certainly the Baltic states could be at stake as well. It'd be interesting to see what Finland does if this pushes them to reevaluate their association with NATO in an official capacity. But I agree with some of the decisions being made that this, I think there's some merit in looking at what we did in Kosovo back in the late 90s, where we really did harshly target not just the national leadership, but the oligarch level that were the business leaders and the finance leaders. So I think what I see U.S. and the United Kingdom and others doing of freezing assets and seizing assets, or at least threatening to, will have as much or more of a powerful influence as, you know, using military force to counter. I don't see the United States putting ground forces on the ground, but we'll certainly support with intelligence, with command and control, with air. NATO is certainly not committed to committing ground forces for Ukraine, but they have certainly a historical association to say we want to defend the concept of a democratic process that they've seen going on in Ukraine over the last decades.
And General, just to follow up, Bloomberg is reporting that Western allies see Kyiv falling to Russian forces within hours. Does that surprise you that it's that swift?
Well, it doesn't surprise me it's that swift if that's what Putin wants to do. He could easily do that My concern is if Kyiv falls, there will certainly high likelihood of a fairly significant refugee problem flowing out of Ukraine into Europe. That will change the metric on Europe. Historically, when you look at the Balkans, when you look at Kosovo in that area, it was one thing to go in and say we need to stop ethnic cleansing, but it changed the whole metric when you started having 1-3 million people refugeeing into Europe and the financial burden that put on the EU and on NATO. And that will certainly change the metric as to whether it's a threat to NATO economically, even if it's not a threat to NATO militarily.
All right. Well, story just crossing the Bloomberg just about 20 minutes ago. Companies postponing bond sales in the U.S. and Europe, and credit risk gauges surging after Russia invaded Ukraine. Peter Chair, I got to go to you on that. You're watching. You're head of macro strategy at Academy, watching the markets here. We have bounced back from kind of the more severe risk-off trade earlier in the day. How do you see it, and what in particular disturbs you when you watch the financial markets?
So clearly we've had a lot of excess risk in the system. We haven't gone away from having to deal with the Fed, and the Fed's fighting inflation. There's certainly no easing in the inflation pressure from this. So I think although this is impacting markets, we had that battle with the Fed. That's ongoing. We were at high valuations. I've become a little bit constructive this morning, actually yesterday. Obviously this overnight was a little bit scary, but kind of added more risk. And really the view there is that if this can become contained, if these sanctions are effective, slows them down, people kind of calm down and say, okay, Ukraine and Russia, this is awful for the people, particularly in Ukraine, but it is only a small part of the global economy. We will figure ways out around that. So I think that's why we're getting some of this bounce, is people are starting to try and say, if this is contained. So I'm comfortable with that for the near term. I'm a little bit concerned, one, that Putin won't be contained, that he sounded so aggressive Monday and again last night in his speeches that he is going to push the envelope. And the other thing is we have not discussed really what's China thinking about this. What does China do? Does China threaten anything? So I think there's a lot more things going forward that could go wrong than good. So although it's constructive, I'm pulling back a little bit. And the other area, though, I am very constructive on, the U.S. energy industry. I think this has to change for everyone going forward, how we think about energy, where we get our energy from, both in Western Europe and the U.S.
I felt like we had gotten there, Paul, while, right?
Yep, shale. Shale was all the rage. It went from being a net importer to a net exporter. But again, it just highlights the risk, particularly in Europe, on Russia. Peter, one of the issues here that I've seen analyzed today and discussed today is inflation. It's obviously one of the big headwinds for financial markets even before today. But when you think about some of the sanctions, you think about where energy prices can go in the near to intermediate term, does this raise the inflation risk profile for you in these markets?
Sure. I think we're going to see some commodity inflation. We're also probably going to see some supply chains, right? If we start not seeing the flow of goods commodities from Russia, that could screw up people's supply chain. So I do think this is going to be a little bit more inflationary. However, because it's going to be so clearly identified as this, I think it will give the administration breathing room maybe to help people out in some way, whether they can reduce gas taxes, whether we reinstate some of those child tax credits. Something to, mitigate it is much easier now that it's so clearly defined this next boost would really come from Russia. So I think, and the Fed will also be able to, put on hold because this will be viewed as temporary.
Wait, when you say Fed on hold, that means nothing March or just?
I think the 50 bips in March is certainly off the table right now. I think they're going to be very careful about what they do when you have this period of volatility. And it's almost regardless of what market you're looking at, they are behaving very, very illiquidly, right? And we know during the pandemic, one of the things that scared the Fed was how illiquid the Treasury market had become, so they intervened. We're not at that stage yet, but you just look at these gaps, these air pockets where stock prices or bond prices are one level, and then you look 2 seconds later, they're at another level. So I think people are going to be very cautious about hiking, squeezing down liquidity when you're seeing the market really struggling to digest all this.
General, Russia, 150, maybe 200,000 troops, Ukraine, over 40 million people. What does Putin do after the government falls? Is it you can't occupy with that kind of force, can you?
No, you can't. And that is obviously the big question. What is his really long-term intent? Is it purely and simply to own the eastern part of Ukraine so he overreaches and then pulls back, and that's part of his negotiation strategy? Does he really want to own all of Ukraine, or does he just want Ukraine not to be part of NATO? Does he want to go and do the same thing to Belarus and to, you know, some of the other border former Soviet Union nations to say, no, I really do want to reestablish a Soviet Union-like time and space barrier between Europe and me? So it's hard to really know what he's thinking. I think we'll certainly see indications of that over the course of the next 24, 48 hours. And a lot will depend on how strongly Europe and NATO, of course, the G7s are responding strongly right now. But, you know, does NATO have the unanimity to be able to bring sanctions, which means you got to hold all the NATO countries in the group? You can't have anybody drop out to do it. Does he have the ability to put pressure on some of the outliers that are in NATO that might be unwilling to side against Russia publicly? So I think the next 24, 48 hours will be very fluid. You know, you hope the right answer is if he's going to Kyiv, he's going to Kyiv purely and simply to give himself negotiation room so that he can give something back and therefore have something to get at the table and negotiate and get what he wants, which I think what he really wants is Ukraine not in NATO and some kind of guarantee over the course of a certain amount of time that that's not going to happen and then be reassessed.
Hey, guys, I want to ask you about China. I mean, this is something Peter and I, Paul and I were talking about off air. And Peter, I wanted to put it to you first. I mean, it's still sticking with me that President Biden, when asked about China, are you urging China to isolate Russia? And he says, I'm not ready to comment. How does China play into your thinking, especially when you look at it from an economic perspective, so important to the global economy in terms of growth, and also a market perspective? So many global companies have been, you know, for how many decades, counting on the Chinese economy for future growth?
Yeah, I think it's a big deal on a couple fronts. One is, you go back 2 weeks ago when China and Russia announced a new pipeline with a 30-year deal in euros, right? So they are trying to, one, break the stranglehold on the dollar, both on energy and with Russia. By, you know, Russia has a problem, right? Europe has been trying to get away from fossil fuels. That's part of the reason, you know, when it didn't work this year, they've been more desperate for fossil fuels than they would have been otherwise. So Russia's now found a long-term customer. We know China needs natural resources. And I suspect deep down, China will probably do things to potentially help Russia, you know, ease the pain of some of these sanctions, because, you know, China is clearly behaving independent. And while they haven't done anything on Taiwan, I don't think we expect anything. And Taiwan's a very different, you know, nut to crack. Xi has to be watching how we're playing this and determining that. And Taiwan is so much more important to the global economy that any, you know, escalation there of any sort would be, you know, very scary. You know, semiconductor supply chains. Their insurance companies are huge holders of our debt. So that, to me, is going to be the second order effect. How far does Russia go? What do they do next? And then how does China start behaving? And so far, the indications are that they are actually playing nicely together. I don't think they're allied in any which way, but maybe they just have, you know, their needs are kind of mutually aligned right now.
General, I want to get a sense. Did you have any intel or any opinion about to what extent the Russian people are supporting Mr. Putin here with this invasion of what some people would call kind of like a brother country of Ukraine?
Yeah, I have no intel, but I purely have opinion. And my opinion is you got a mixed bag. There's no doubt that Russia, the Russian people, love the status that they held during the Soviet Union as in regard to sitting at the world table, sitting as a superpower, being respected. There's no doubt they miss that. There's okay. No doubt that they enjoy that aspect of what Putin brings to the plate, where he seems determined to try to reestablish parts of that. But I don't think that they see a land grab of Ukraine or of other former Soviet countries as being a wise move. And they're certainly going to feel it from both the inflation standpoint, but also just the economic sanctions and so forth that will be carried out that will probably hurt them more than anyone. What I really hope is that the sanctions we do are very clearly targeted at the oligarchs level and at the wealthy and at their assets. And because if they're who are targeted, then history says there is the plausibility that they put pressure on Putin to go, whoa, 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 I didn't know that we were going to get this. I mean, these aren't even assets in Russia. I don't even live in Russia. I live in the West. And they're seizing all my property, my real estate, my yacht, you know, my bank accounts. I mean, I'm being totally frozen out. That could have a major impact on Putin's support base, you know, and his friends that rally around him.
All right, folks, thank you so much. Really appreciate your insight and really, really helpful, certainly, for our audience. Peter Cheer, head of macro strategy at Academy Securities, on the phone in Florida and joining us on the phone in South Carolina, retired Major General Maston Robson. He's a geopolitical intelligence advisor to Academy Securities, their advisory board.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
Hey, listen, one other story that's certainly been on our radar is today's Bloomberg Big Take, and it covers how President Biden's inner circle feared sanctions to scare off President Putin that they wouldn't ultimately work. And that story from Bloomberg News foreign policy reporter Nick Wadhams, you can find it on the Bloomberg and at Bloomberg.com. But Nick, luckily for us, joins us on the phone from Washington, D.C. So, Nick, what were you hearing about President Biden's inner circle when it came to sanctions?
Well, you know, today and the president's recent just press conference he just has had now has kind of thrown everything up in the air. But essentially what I was hearing over the last few weeks and the story I wrote that came out this morning was that the administration had been pushing a strategy, telegraphing that, you know, they wanted to tell Vladimir Putin how bad the sanctions against him would be as a way of deterring him from going to war. Of course, then the president just gave a press conference just now saying no one had ever believed that. That's what I was hearing from a lot of folks, that they never really believed the strategy. And that's important because the administration is just sort of fundamentally rewriting the way that sanctions are used. They wanted to test this proposition that, okay, we're not willing to put military boots on the ground in Ukraine. What we're going to do instead is telegraph the severe economic sanctions that you'll face if you invade. Obviously, President Vladimir Putin just ignored that. He's gone ahead and showed that that threat didn't deter him after all.
Yeah, Nick, that's kind of where I wanted to go, because I'm just looking at your story here, and you reported that late last year, President Biden, made it clear that the U.S. would not send troops or heavy weapons to Ukraine. In hindsight, was that admission, was that strategic communication a mistake?
Well, you know, they argue it was not a mistake because they felt that the primary purpose of that in a lot of ways was to make sure that Vladimir Putin had no excuse, that the world was very clear about what exactly he was doing and how his arguments had no basis in fact. And they really wanted to project an air of unity, allied nations arrayed against Vladimir Putin, and to isolate him. You know, so the messaging campaign toward Russia for a long time has been about not just cornering Vladimir Putin, but making a bigger point, sending a signal that allies were united, and also sending a signal to other countries like China, you know, if it has designs on Taiwan, we're not going to let you get away with it. Problem there, of course, is that if Vladimir Putin is able to get away with it, if these sanctions are not as impactful as the U.S. claims they are, well, then Xi Jinping may get the opposite message and realize that he can do it without maximum punishment from the West.
So, Nick, reading the tea leaves today, I'm sure you're talking to your sources in Washington. You got to tell me, or I hope you can tell me, there's some bipartisan support for condemning what Russia is doing. Do you have that sense that Republicans and Democrats view this for what it is, which is, you know, an invasion of a, you know, essentially an inferior country in terms of military clout?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we are well past the days when you would see an action like this trigger a response where there would be, like, I don't know, bipartisan statements where you would have senators and members of the House from both sides of the aisle issuing joint statements saying that, you know, a foreign policy issues like this stops at the water's edge. We're united in confronting Putin. But I mean, generally speaking, they are actually pretty unified in their approach to this. Both sides are now calling for the same thing. They want really intense sanctions. They want Biden to keep going. They want more help for Ukraine, and they're pretty strident and similar in their condemnations of Russia. Of course, Republicans, in large part, also blame Joe Biden for this. They say that Putin took advantage and got a signal from what happened in Afghanistan, and he pounced on it. Democrats aren't making that claim, but there is general unity on condemning Russia for the invasion itself.
What's interesting, too, and I wonder, you know, there are sanctions that maybe, you know, Russia can kind of shake off, but there's been a lot of talk about the international payment system and the international, you know, how we are all connected financially and maybe blocking Russia from SWIFT. And so I do wonder, how does the inner circle feel about something like that?
I think they have always been very, very reluctant to use SWIFT for a couple of reasons. One, because you can achieve a lot of the goals of, if you sort of issue a blanket ban on Russia being able to do financial transactions, that's like dropping a nuclear bomb. Whereas if you go sanction individual banks, well, then you can achieve the same effect with those banks. But if you say, no, Russia can't conduct any financial transactions through SWIFT, that then makes it impossible to do any of the sort of legitimate activity that is allowed that's not affected by sanctions. So the economic consequences to the West would be extremely severe, and they've always been very wary of doing SWIFT, though the administration says it's not ruling it out in the future if Vladimir Putin goes even further.
Hey, Nick, one of the interesting articles I read on the Bloomberg today was just kind of some reporting about maybe a little silver lining here for this whole issue here with Ukraine is the U.S. intel was spot on, and as opposed to, say, back in 2003 with the mass destruction and all those weapons of mass destruction. Is there a feeling in D.C. that our intel really did get it right?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're going to see a fair number of victory laps by the intelligence community. But, you know, what I've heard from folks, too, is that, you know, the intelligence in this case was pretty unambiguous. So obviously there's a lot they're not telling us about the degree of certainty
right.
They had, the suggestion that there's some signals communication. But those satellite photos, I mean, man, those were pretty self-explanatory when you had Russia massing all those forces on the border.
All right. Thank you so much, Nick. We appreciate it. Bloomberg News foreign policy reporter Nick Wadhams joining us on the phone from Washington, D.C.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
We had Brent crude at one point earlier today, over $105 a barrel. That really gets your attention, as Tom Keene would say. But it's backed off. We're now at $99 a barrel. So that is what we call volatility. Where do we take this energy picture going forward? We have one of our favorite energy experts with us right now, Dr. Ellen Wald, president of Transversal Consulting. She's also a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council and a Bloomberg opinion contributor. So she is quite busy. She joins us on the phone here from Jacksonville, Florida. So, Ellen, thank you so much for joining us here. What did you make of the intraday trading today?
Yeah, wow. Lots of volatility. I mean, we saw WTI up at, you know, just over 100, and now it's dropped, you know, more than $7. We're back down in the low 90s. And I think that really reflected the fact that there was so much uncertainty over whether there were going to be sanctions, more sanctions, what those sanctions were. There was a lot of noise coming out from various officials, but nothing in terms of the clarity about what those sanctions could be. And I think there was definitely a lot of concern that they might actually affect the ability to import and also to purchase Russian energy exports. And so after President Biden's speech, where he clarified that that was not on the table, I think we saw oil prices really back down after that. Now, that doesn't mean that some of the sanctions that they're implementing or the activity in general isn't making it more difficult to buy Russian oil. In fact, we are hearing that there are some difficulties with purchasing Russian oil, but it did kind of take that level of uncertainty down a notch.
Ellen, you've studied the global energy markets. You've got a book called Saudi Inc. It's on the history of Aramco in Saudi Arabia. You also contribute to the Bloomberg Opinion space. I do wonder what's happening as a result of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Are new lines being drawn potentially in terms of energy alliance and the energy markets?
Yeah, this is a big question. Everyone's kind of wondering, well, where is Saudi Arabia in all of this? And they've basically stayed silent on the whole matter. The last we really heard was at an energy conference last week. We saw a bunch we saw a lot of the Arab producers in OPEC basically saying, no, we don't think that, you know, we need to increase production. We're not looking to operate outside the bounds of our current agreement. And then even had the UAE saying that a lot of the price increases due to this geopolitical tension and uncertainty in Ukraine, which is not something that they feel they can just that they can impact with just increasing production. Now, OPEC is supposed to meet next week. OPEC Plus, actually, is supposed to meet next week on Wednesday to discuss what's going on in April. So that should be an interesting meeting because Russia is basically the most important component of the OPEC Plus group. It does seem that Saudi Arabia, at the very least, does not want to do anything to endanger its relationship with Russia, but I think all eyes will be on that meeting.
Ellen, just reading today some of the Bloomberg reporting that approximately 35 to 40% of Europe's natural gas comes from Russia. That doesn't sound like a very stable situation to me. Are there any solutions to try to reduce their dependence on Russia? Can the U.S. shale folks come up and do the LNG play? I mean, if I'm in Europe, how do I reduce my dependence?
You know, at this point, there's nothing that can really be done in the short term. This is a problem, and this is an issue that has been a long time in the making. It's been known for several years, for many years, in fact. And even during the Trump administration, when Secretary Perry was the energy secretary, he actually made a very concerted effort to try to pitch American LNG to European countries as, you know, and made the pitch that they need to diversify their sources from Russia. The problem is Russian gas is cheap, and I guess they weren't really thinking about the geopolitical issues that come along with that. And yes, American LNG can go to Europe, but it's an expensive process. You know, we still use a lot of natural gas at home, so it's not like we can just suddenly export all of it. And it takes time to build new terminals, get new contracts. But this is something that they should have known about.
Yeah.
And so there really is no quick fix here.
Ellen, I don't know, 5 years from now we look back at this, what are we going to be thinking about the situation when it comes to the energy markets? And just got about 25 seconds.
You know, that's a really good question. I think we'll probably be seeing the wild swings and be thinking, wow, things were really volatile then, so much more volatile than they are now.
As we zip around in our EVs and we don't need oil, right?
Maybe.
Maybe, I know, right? Ellen, you're a go-to for us on the energy markets, and we really appreciate it. Dr. Ellen Wald, she's president of Transversal Consulting, senior fellow at the Atlantic Council, a Bloomberg Opinion contributor, and we mentioned her book, Saudi Inc., joining us there from Florida.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline, it's teamwork, and it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
I'm driving in my car.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
You drive me crazy.
It's the question that drives us.
You drive me crazy.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, everybody, just about 10 minutes left in today's trading session, and we are climbing even higher on the equity markets, and we are at our best levels of the session, more than 3% higher, as you heard from Charlie, on that NASDAQ. Emerging markets, though, they have been bearing the brunt of investors' flight from risk assets after Russia staged that full-scale invasion of Ukraine. I was looking at, Paul, the emerging markets as measured by the MSCI, down around 4% today following that Russian invasion, and pretty much staying there.
Yeah, there's a lot of carnage there. And I think a lot of investors, and that's part of the market, have to rethink it, at least the near-term risk. Let's turn to a professional right now who does this stuff for a living, Yakov Arnopolin. He's executive vice president and portfolio manager for PIMCO. I've heard of them. They're pretty big.
Yeah.
He joins us on the phone from New York City. Yakov, you've been in this game a while now. Give us your perspective on how the financial markets reacted today to a pretty stunning piece of news.
Yes. Well, hi, Carol. Hi, Paul. Thanks for having me. Great to be on. Obviously, it's been quite a volatile day, quite an emotional day as well. You know, I think I'll kick off by saying that certainly our thoughts and prayers are with the people of Ukraine, and we're very much hoping for a swift resolution to this crisis, although we have to recognize there is very limited visibility in terms of what exactly is going to happen. And when I think about it and when I look at the market reaction today and we assess the spillover to other emerging markets, to the rest of Europe, to the U.S., it's been interesting to observe, there is a very common knee-jerk reaction. All of the emerging markets, whether you look at stocks or bonds or currencies, have come under a huge amount of pressure as people anticipate there will be outflows, or there is kind of this, again, associated selling. I think in reality, the Russia and Ukraine are the epicenter, of today's and, today's events. If we look past that, there is, from a fundamental standpoint, right, there should not be much of a contagion to Nigeria, right, or Argentina and so on. And yet we've seen a commensurate amount of selling in those countries as kind of, again, a sort of knee-jerk reaction. So I think that will reverse with time, given the upward pressure on commodity prices. Actually is kind of net beneficial for the balance sheets of a lot of the commodity producers that form emerging markets. The very same countries I named, like Nigeria, for example. We've seen upward pressure on fertilizer prices recently, so places like Morocco can benefit. So it will really come down to picking up, looking through the damage that has been incurred, looking at some of the weakness in bonds and bonds, equities, currencies, and there'll be quite a few interesting things as we parse through all of that.
Yaakov, I'm wondering in a market like today, I mean, certainly on the U.S. side of things, investors came in and thought, okay, there's some opportunities for me that we were getting maybe perhaps a bit oversold, at least in reaction to the geopolitical concerns, specifically when it comes to Russia and Ukraine. Were you doing any kind of buying or selling today?
We've been following this very closely. I think as we witnessed quite a rebound in U.S. markets, I think it comes down to the fact that, in many cases, geopolitical concerns create a very short-dated, very short-term threat to markets, and markets kind of look past that. And I think some of that has to do with the fact that realistically, Europe is far closer geographically, obviously, but also far more entangled from a trade standpoint, with the two countries on the front pages. For the U.S., this is much more remote, both because trade has shrunk to almost nothing with Russia over the past year since the beginning of the conflict in 2014, whereas for Europe, it's still material. We're looking, I think it's something an average of $50 billion per year of trade with Russia. So this is much more impactful for European markets than for the U.S. So it's probably not surprising we saw the people coming out to do some bond fishing
so,
today.
Forgive me, not being sassy, but is that a yes or no that you were doing some buying or selling?
Well, let's put it this way. We're starting to see quite a lot of, I would call it, not quite bargain basement, but very, very attractive valuations in places like Romania, in the periphery, in Eastern Europe, and some of the commodity producers I mentioned, places like Colombia, are starting to appear attractive as well. Because higher commodity prices, and also how much people have sold for no apparent reason other than fear of contagion. So I think there's certainly interesting bonds and interesting offers on offer, interesting paper on offer out there right now.
Yaakov, do you think this event of today will spur central banks around the world to perhaps change the way they're thinking about this tightening cycle?
I think starting with the Fed, it seems unlikely. The reality is this could be quite inflationary. And we also heard President Biden talk today about the focus on tempering and taming inflation in the U.S. So it's difficult to see the Fed changing its course of action. So we still anticipate that hiking will commence next month. Yeah, I think for the ECB, it is a it's certainly more it's a bigger issue because of the linkages I mentioned, because of trade linkages, and then consequently the potential impact on growth in the Eurozone. So, you know, I think there'll be a lot more for them to discuss and debate in terms of when they plan an exit from negative interest rates and,
right.
and what the pacing is going to be. And I think some of that, at the end, look, this is really the day one of the conflict, right? And
right.
it's going to come down to how long does it last and what's the damage.
All right, we got to run. Hey, Yaakov, good to get some time with you and so relevant in terms of today's trade and news. Yaakov Arnapolin, he is Executive VP, Portfolio Manager over at PIMCO, joining us on the phone from New York City.
Thanks for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Download the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
And you can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.